Welcome to Diddy and Hawthorne in the In-Between, or DH&I. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to our podcast about the relevance of literature in the 21st century. Now bookmark that book, and let's begin.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Hello and herzlich willkommen zu unserem Podcast. I am thrilled to be presenting this episode today, our last on the Twilight Saga, and it is about the newest addition to the Twilight Saga entitled Midnight Sun. Quickly, I will just mention here that I assume a familiarity with the saga, including the characters and the events in the saga. If you aren't familiar though, I have put the Wikipedia link in the show notes, or you could listen to last Monday's episode, which goes a bit further in depth about what comes before this novel. I first became aware of Midnight Sun as a concept in early 2011 when I was scouting for future Twilight books, as young teens did back then. And I came across a post on Stephanie Meyer's website which linked a now famous leaked copy of the first 100 pages of the novel from 2008. That post, as well as all of our other source material today, is linked in the show notes for this episode at relevanceofliterature.com/notes. So when I stumbled upon the book when I was at Barnes & Noble, I knew exactly what it was and what it meant that it was finally coming out after 12-something years of anticipation for a lot of fans. If you want to hear the full story of how I found out about Midnight Sun, by the way, that live stream is accessible to all of my patrons at patreon.com/relevanceofliterature. I tell a lot of stories like this one on posts and live streams there, so if you haven't already and are interested, check that out. In any case, we'll be doing a very in-depth analysis of the book today, starting actually with the significance of the book's cover art. The cover of Midnight Sun gives you a lot of information already, as it is a deep red, dripping pomegranate with a black backdrop, so similar in style to the cover of the original that one can't help but put it in the same category of books. When Twilight first came out, the cover was revolutionary in the sense that advertising especially had never seen that way of framing an image before, blood red and with a black backdrop like that. And since then, similar motifs have really become a part of our everyday lexicon. Thus, I find it really special that the cover of this new novel, photographed by the same photographer Roger Hagadoni, pays tribute to the work of that original cover while changing the subject matter to better suit the content of this new novel. If memory serves well, Edward first makes the pomegranate connection when he has dinner with Bella in Port Angeles after her almost attack in the alleyway, and thereafter Edward often references the myth of Persephone in Hades, where when Persephone was out picking flowers one day, she was abducted by Hades. In the end, quote, Persephone tied herself to Hades by eating a few pomegranate seeds, unquote. That's from the pomegranate link in the description. The myth is fitting for several reasons, one being Edward's distaste for himself, he sees himself as a monster, Hades-like, and another being the haplessness of Persephone when the myth begins, which is much like the unknowing, innocent nature of the first Twilight book, especially before Bella meets Edward. While I read this novel very quickly in anticipation of the last two episodes, the thing that struck me the most as I got into the novel was how much Stephanie Meyer's writing has improved. I don't mean this comment to be backhanded in any way, like I'm not saying the original Twilight books weren't well written, but I do think that Meyer got better at contrast, especially in her writing, meaning that as I was going through the sentence styles and types, they were varied in such a way that I often stopped to mull over sentences, especially short ones, and that was a new experience for me with these novels for sure, because with the other two novels that I read for this episode, the original Twilight book and Breaking Dawn, I found that I could just breeze through because I didn't have as much cause to stop and ponder the actual construction or usage of the sentences as I did in this new novel. And I wanted to add that I didn't notice this new writing stuff that she's doing when I read Life and Death either, which came out a few years ago. And again, I think that's a testament to her writing itself and its improvement over time, as well as the more creative and lasting qualities about the storyline of Twilight. A question that I have received quite a few times since we started this mini-series is, how would you recommend reading Midnight Sun, and would Midnight Sun be a good introduction to the saga if the person you were recommending it to had never read any of the other books before? So for the first iteration of this question, how would I recommend reading this book generally? That depends on your familiarity with the saga. For me, when the new novel came out, I hadn't read any of the books since 2017, but since I grew up with the series, I felt comfortable with tackling this novel before reading any of the others. After I read Midnight Sun and decided to do this mini-series though, I decided to read both the original Twilight book as well as Breaking Dawn, as I just said, because I wanted the first-hand comparison between Midnight Sun and the original, and then also a more mature and perhaps altered perspective from Bella in Breaking Dawn, just to compare with Edward's more mature perspective in Midnight Sun. What I would recommend for readers who, like me, were familiar with the saga would be to tackle Midnight Sun straight away as I did, no regrets there, and then if you like, I would seriously recommend reading Breaking Dawn afterwards. For me, Midnight Sun was sort of an epic in the sense that it is a super long 650 plus page novel, and it's such a different perspective from what we're used to reading, so comparing that with the more mature new Bella in Breaking Dawn is a really fun experience, especially since once you're in Edward's head for so long, your reading of the other books gets automatically colored with this new perspective, so there's more meaning and weight behind even some of the glances and gestures that we see elsewhere in the series. I can also see an argument for reading New Moon afterwards, as Edward's thoughts and decision-making colors the entire plot for that novel as well, and the reason why I didn't do that myself is because it's my least favorite novel of the series. I don't get a point to it. And to wrap this up, unless you are a really meticulous reader by design, I would hold off on reading the original Twilight book until you let Midnight Sun settle for a bit, because as I mentioned before, the writing is way better, the themes are way more complex, and overall, Midnight Sun for me held up better as an adult reader than the original did when I came back to it. Reading Midnight Sun also changed the way that I saw the movies, which is something that I didn't expect at all because the performances are of course the same as they always have been. As well, Rob Pattinson didn't have this novel to go off of for his performance, but I think that especially considering the way that the first and penultimate movies turned out, they both lend themselves very well to this new look into Edward. The first movie, to explain this a bit further, reads like an indie film with its off-coloring and weird storyline, but its focus on their relationship absolutely holds up with this novel. The penultimate film I mentioned because it is my favorite of the five, and I think that movie in particular was the one where the audience realizes how well the cast had adapted to their roles, and in my opinion, that comfort level allowed them to really explore characters in a way they hadn't before in the series, which is of course pertinent to what some people are calling this new character study of a novel. To answer the second part of that question with would I recommend introducing someone to Twilight via this new novel, absolutely I would not do that, and the reason why is because of the headspace that Edward is in for the entire novel, and that headspace introduces themes that were fairly foreign to the innocent Twilight of our youths, like ire and anguish, and I think that this perspective is better read as supplementary rather than this all-encompassing viewpoint. This topic bleeds well into the next one on our agenda for today, which is what Midnight Sun added to the series. I've pretty much covered everything that I want to talk about already, but I'll summarize that here. The biggest thing that I noticed was how mature the novel was compared to the others, even Breaking Dawn, which makes sense because Edward is 100 plus years old, but even more relevant than Edward's age is the fact that, as Stephanie Meyer noted in her Barnes & Noble livestream last Friday, linked in the show notes of course, Bella's story is a story about falling in love. It's quite innocent and it's told from a young and somewhat naive perspective. Edward's story, on the other hand, is tormented in a twisted sort of way because he has a lot of internal issues regarding what he is, the risks involved in their relationship, etc., etc., which is, by design, more complex and in that sense also more mature. It takes a better reader, I think, to keep track of it all and not get lost in the folds between Edward's internal and external viewpoints. After maturity and also depth to the original storyline, Midnight Sun adds different emotions to the picture that I expected, but still, in a sense, came out surprised by. I mentioned anguish and ire earlier. Also, there was a feeling of restraint on multiple levels throughout this novel, and I think that Edward does a better job in general of articulating his emotions, probably because he is, again, more mature, has more brain space for it, whatever the exact reasoning may be. But again, anguish has no place in the love story that we get from Bella, and what a complex thing to be adding to the mix here as someone who loathes themselves and feels that they are stringing someone along who will probably die and is undeserving of that death. Ire, this internal wrath that the character feels alongside the love and the feeling of why me, why this, all of those emotions are really interesting to play with when reading this reinterpretation of Bella and Edward's relationship. Now moving on to changes in the novel, and I admit there will be way better accounts of this than what I can offer you, but I'll do my best here. First off, the length is so different than the original Twilight book because of Edward's widened frame and his widened perspective. He just notices more and can think more in the space of a second than a human can. There's also a lot of negative space from the original novel that Meyer was able to play around with, especially what Edward did at night when he was watching Bella, and where he went when he was missing school, etc. So Edward's narrative does fill in a lot of gaps in that way. Regarding dialogue, Meyer did an amazing job with sticking within the framework of the first novel, as she did when she wrote Life and Death, by the way. I only did a close inspection of a few chapters, including the last one called Epilogue, in both novels, and the dialogue especially is so cool to read as it is recontextualized in Midnight Sun. There are some places where Meyer added and messed around with certain lines and pieces of dialogue, especially during Edward's questioning day before they go to the meadow. Bella has a few new lines about her favorite books, films, and music that I picked up on, and also the meadow scene itself, I believe, was condensed in Midnight Sun, just because it's a dialogue-heavy scene that didn't afford Meyer enough room for exploring Edward's perspective the way she wanted to. There is way more information about Meyer's changes and her decision-making process about those changes in the novel in the live stream that I mentioned earlier, so again, if you'd like to be a meticulous reader in that way, I would certainly recommend the live stream because the questions she was answering will absolutely help. Speaking of the meadow scene, I noticed and appreciated how that scene became a distinct turning point in Midnight Sun, as it had not been in the original Twilight book. Bella certainly notices Edward's closeness, for example, after the scene in the meadow, but the exact change remains elusive to Bella, and therefore vague to us as readers as well. From Edward's perspective, though, we get walked through exactly what motivates that turning point in the novel in terms of Edward's decision to commit to their relationship, which in turn adds meaning to the whole storyline from that point forward. Lastly, because of all the other changes that I have outlined up until this point, the audience of Midnight Sun, to me, is necessarily different from the audience of the original Twilight series. This change was, in fact, the first that I noticed when I picked up the novel, because her note before the novel reads as follows. Quote, "This book is dedicated to all the readers who have been such a happy part of my life for the last 15 years. When we first met, many of you were young teenagers with bright, beautiful eyes full of dreams for the future. I hope that in the years that have passed, you've all found your dreams and that the reality of them was even better than you'd hoped." And that note, right from the outset, told me that she was very aware of this new, or rather older, audience that she was catering to, namely my generation, the ones who had grown up with the Twilight Saga on their bookshelves as kids, and I really believe that the author's note sets a great tone for the novel as a whole. Now let's talk about the male gaze, which is a concept that I have not stopped thinking about since I first set my eyes on this novel over 2 weeks ago. The Oxford Languages Dictionary defines the male gaze as, quote, "the perspective of a notionally typical heterosexual man considered as embodied in the audience or intended audience for films and other visual media, characterized by a tendency to objectify or sexualize women, unquote. This is quite a serious topic, and one that I don't take lightly when I read novels like this one from a heterosexual male perspective, regardless of who the author is, by the way. To start, the reason why this concept came upon me so strongly when I was considering the novel was because when I thought about Twilight and Bella and Edward's relationship, I automatically, as an adult, remember the problematic aspects of their relationship, especially how domineering Edward is, how incredibly unmatched they are physically and mentally, and as well how little those two problems get addressed in the series as a whole. I mentioned last week that one of the things that really irked me about Midnight Sun is how many times Bella notes that everything Edward does is perfect and so much better than how she could do it, that's implied, and those relentless comments never get directly addressed in the novel. Edward might think something along the lines of, wow, I can't believe how blind she is about herself, but there was never an attempt to bring out how toxic that kind of thinking is, in a relationship especially, never any attempt as well to put them on equal footing in any way, and I disagree with the notion that the payoff of Bella becoming a vampire and becoming stronger and more restrained than Edward at the end is enough to mitigate this huge problem within the series. Similarly, I don't think that writing life and death from the male perspective mitigates this issue either. The book, from my experience, was not as substantial as the original series, and indeed, not as substantial as this new novel. And again, just to belabor the point that I made in last week's episode, if you're asking yourself how young is too young to read Twilight, my measurement for that is that you are too young if you do not hold the understanding from the outset that Edward and Bella's relationship is not an ideal for one's real life. Now, amazingly, I do think that, intended or not, Meyer does avoid the male gaze in some very meaningful ways in this novel. Unfortunately, she did not answer any questions that were too serious during the live stream, much to my chagrin, honestly, so we don't have an answer for whether or not the male gaze was something she considered or purposefully avoided during her drafting process. But in any case, I've got 3 points here for you. The first is that Edward very obviously notices and appreciates Bella's qualities as a person before he looks at her body. In fact, he has a running tally that he keeps throughout the novel to remind us that her character is tantamount to his attraction to her. The second is that Edward is quite self-absorbed, quite conceited, as we can tell from the conversation during the infamous mushroom ravioli scene where Edward is genuinely surprised to hear that he, quote, dazzles Bella, which actually works out in the narrative's favor in this case because often he's too agonized or distracted or inward-facing to hone in on Bella in a way that would denote the male gaze. And thirdly, new, more mature audience aside, the Twilight Saga is known for its innocence in many respects, and I could tell by the commentary and questions that Meyer answered on her live stream that that vein of innocence is how she wants Twilight to be framed and discussed by her audience, and the storyline does have this young, innocent quality to it throughout. With YA especially, I do think that in general it is worthwhile to discuss potential problems like the male gaze, however, because those are the books that are raising the next generation. Alright, and to end this episode, as well as our mini-series on Twilight this month, I thought it would be fun to end with some of the predictions that I have made and heard about with the new hype that this novel has garnered from Twihards around the country and indeed the world. Starting with future movies, Jenny and I predicted last week that there was no way we were going to get another live-action movie out of this novel, especially not with the same cast. First, Midnight Sun and Twilight the original are essentially the same movie, give or take, and second, Rob Pattinson and Kristen Stewart's performances are still fresh in the minds of people from our generation, so I can't see anyone else playing their roles. Third, I might add, I've been out of the loop because the lives of famous people are generally uninteresting to me, but Rob Pattinson is playing Batman soon and Kristen Stewart is getting married. Both of those fantastic interviews that I watched to get that information are linked in the show notes, so there's just no way for me to picture them on set together in those same roles again. Now, Meyer said in her live stream that if she pursued a Netflix show based on this series, she would prefer it to be made in the style of the Into the Spider-Verse movie, so an animated series, which would go well with her other work like the graphic novels and the illustrated guide, but again, I don't see that happening for at least 2 years if that does indeed happen. And ending with future book possibilities, so exciting. I think that it would be incredibly redundant to write the rest of the series from Edward's perspective, even though it would be interesting to get some thoughts from Edward in Breaking Dawn, because we really get so much from Midnight Sun that it's easy to reframe your whole perspective, as I mentioned earlier, of his character and his thoughts from just this one novel, and it's quite powerful in that respect. But Meyer did also say in her livestream that fans of the series could probably look forward to a book or three that take place after the events of Breaking Dawn, so props to Jenny for predicting that one, though that book, or those books plural, would be written and released on a timescale similar to that of Midnight Sun. It has been so fun and rewarding to walk down memory lane with this series for the past 2 weeks, and I want to thank all of you in my audience, and especially my patrons, for making that possible. Finally, if anyone knows someone who can get me an interview or a few emails with Stephanie Meyer, let me know, because I would honestly love to make that happen. Alright, y'all, I will see you on Thursday. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from us, there is a show and a series for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our website, relevanceofliterature.com, under the ongoing series tab for links to our entire back catalog of episodes. We also have a couple of open surveys that you can find through the links in the description, so if you have 3 minutes while you're waiting in line somewhere, we would very much appreciate your feedback on our show. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, and we'll see you next time.